This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Charter schools, they're no longer brand new. They've been around for over 20 years in Texas. That should be plenty of time to figure out what's working and what's not. Still, many people have questions about charters, and the main one is, are they any better than traditional public schools? Are they any worse? Well, the answer is, that depends. And parents had better do their homework when they pick a charter school for their kids. You could find yourself in a charter school that's on the bottom of the list. What does that mean? We're going to be talking about charter schools and what and their track record and what they look like and their funding. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Tweet at us at tprsource. Tell us your experiences with charter schools. If you were a charter school teacher, I'd like to hear from you as well, 210-614-8980. We're joined this afternoon by Sharon Nichols, a research associate for the Center for Research and Policy in Education, a professor of educational psychology at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Joshua Childs, an assistant professor of educational policy and planning in the Department of Education and Administration at UT Austin. Ingrid Cotton is back with us. She runs the blog called San Antonio Charter Moms, and Camille Phillips is a Texas Public Radio education reporter. And again, the number to call in is 210-614-8980. Welcome to The Source. All of you, it's great to have you here this afternoon. Sharon Nichols, charter schools, the big question is, are they any better or any worse than traditional public schools? We've got 20 years of data. Do we know anything?
Well, what we know as it relates to student achievement is they're no better, no worse. There's some charters that do that outperform traditional public schools, and there are many that underperform. So it's relatively even on that score. However, because of such wide variation across the United States in terms of how they're regulated, we see lots of diversity and variation in terms of various aspects of how they're run. And we see lots of problems that have emerged over the years in terms of financial corruption, gaming. You see charter schools suspending students at higher rates or removing them if they don't want to educate them because they're not subject to all the same rules in every single state. So we see a lot of problems because of the regulation lapses and the lighter regulation across the nation. So that tends to be a problem with using charters as a policy to fix traditional public education schools, because it introduces some serious problems for how we educate those students.
Joshua Childs, what was the problem that charter schools were supposed to fix, and have they done that?
Yeah, so one of the things that the creation of charters were supposed to fix was to help reduce some of these inequality, achievement, opportunity gaps that we see, you know, between students of different races, different income levels. And so, you know, charters have been started in many urban areas, and usually as a response to the low performance, or what some people would call failing, of the traditional public schools. And in some cases, there's evidence that students have benefited from charters in some metropolitan urban areas. But in other cases, you still see the same type of gaps and differences between different types of students with different backgrounds. And so it remains an open question about whether charters over the last 25, 30 years have really helped in terms of closing some of these opportunity gaps and improving educational outcomes for all students.
Looking at a report that was released in May of this year, charter schools in North Texas ranked lower overall in quality than traditional public schools in the state, according to a report by Children at Risk. Charter schools serving primarily Black or Latino students did worse in all terms of achievement. So if the problems that charter schools are supposed to solve, trying to close that achievement gap, looking at these North Texas schools in the Dallas area, it seems not to be doing that. Joshua?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a good point that you raised there. And I think one of the things we have to think about, and I think what you're starting to see, is this move in terms of thinking about chartering or moving the traditional public school model into a charter method, right? Even with the results of those findings and so forth, you're starting to see more and more policy shifts towards a charter model. So, for example, in the 84th legislative session of the District of Innovation concept, where districts were given flexibilities that, you know, likened them to many open enrollment charter schools. And so you're starting to see this move more towards this kind of charter organization structure and method. And so I think we'll see even more of these types of studies and results, and without much basis in terms of understanding or really knowing whether these moves are really benefiting students, particularly students of color.
Well, school districts, traditional school districts that have been resorting to having themselves declared as districts of innovations, have been using that as a fig leaf to do things like blow past the limits on the number of children in a classroom, and also being able to hire teachers who are not certified, or at least not certified in the area in which they are teaching. So the innovation is become a buzzword for we've got to, you know, somehow get past these rules and regulations that the TEA has put in place to create better schools, not to actually improve the quality of education. And so that's something that you've seen even at the highest level of Texas, at the TEA, trying to wonder how are we going to rein in these districts of innovations. I'm going to go to Inga Cotton. She runs a blog called the San Antonio Charter Moms, and you have your charter mom yourself. So
that's right.
Talk about your personal experience with being a charter mom, and how do you feel? I mean, you obviously enjoy your charter schools, right?
Yeah, I do. So I have two kids. They're 8 and 10 years old. And we tried just about everything before finding a charter school that was a good fit. So we tried neighborhood public school, homeschooling, private preschool. For our experience, it was hard to find a school setting that was a good fit for my kids, especially my son, who's in special education. So from the parent perspective, having more options to choose from is, it can be very liberating. It can also be confusing because it seems when they, like families go through a process, like they'll join my Facebook group, like a friend will add them, and then they'll say, wait, what's going on? What are all these different schools? You mean I don't just go to the neighborhood school down the street? And then they want to find out, well, which ones are the good schools? And there's various tools for that. It helps to talk to friends. The TEA publishes information. I think you mentioned a study that drew on data from Children at Risk. They have a really good site with ratings about schools. So it's this brave new world of having to navigate school choice, and it can be exciting for parents. As a system, there need to be safeguards to make sure it's fair. And as a parent of a special education child, that's especially important to me, that to make sure that charter schools take care of their fair share of special education students, and that they treat children of color, English language learners, and all those especially needy students with the care that they deserve.
All right, we're going to talk more about that. We certainly want to hear more about your experiences, Inga, with the charter schools here in San Antonio, and how we can help parents ask the right questions and get the answers, not just directly from that charter school, but there's data available. That's a lot of work for a lot of folks, but if we point them in the right direction, that's a big step in helping them do that. We'll also take your questions and comments. We'll hear from Camille Phillips when we come back from this break. She's our TPR education reporter. We're talking about charter schools. We want to try and make them answer some of the big questions that people have about them. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about charter schools. Been around for 20 years. Still a lot of people ask the question, well, what exactly is a charter school? Let me go to Camille Phillips. She's our Texas Public Radio education reporter. And Camille, what is a charter school?
Charter schools are publicly funded, privately run schools. They are public schools, so they don't charge tuition, but they are mostly run by independent charter school operators.
Sometimes when we're talking here, I'm going to say traditional public schools.
Right.
So that's when we're talking about like SAISD and those types. But
right.
They have charter schools inside them.
They do. Most of the time when you refer to charter schools in Texas, you're referring to what Joshua mentioned as open enrollment charter schools. Those are the independent operators that are not affiliated with a school district, a traditional school district. There is something called an in-district charter school. San Antonio ISD, for instance, has like 19 of them, but they are part of the school district. They are still held accountable by the elected school board for the most part. It's a little different system.
And how are charter schools funded?
Charter schools in Texas are mostly funded from the state, whereas traditional ISDs are mostly funded by local sources. It's just different ratios. ISDs are able to tax their local geographic area, where charter schools, for the most part, are not.
But charter schools get about $7,000 per student for whatever their enrollment is. That's what they bill the state for.
Well, in general, always schools are given funding based on the number of students they have. But it's a different formula for charters versus ISDs because of that tax-based difference.
Okay, and starting in the next school year, charter schools are going to be able to get money from the state for their facilities. That's new.
That is new. It's still not a lot of money comparatively, but it is a big change because previously charter schools could not get any money for buildings.
Right. So, and people are saying this is coming out of the dollars that are supposed to be going towards our traditional public schools. We're seeing a scramble of dollars, and we're seeing, and there's fewer dollars to scramble for because the state is providing fewer dollars per student in the state.
Yes. I mean, if you look over the last decade, the percentage of overall funding for public schools in Texas has gone to the state percentage has gone down ratio to local percentage.
Okay, let's go to the callers. We got a lot of callers here. The number is 210-614-8980 as we have our community conversation about charter schools. And this is Mauro. Mauro, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes. Oh, good afternoon. How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
All right. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, just keep you for a second. Just want to let you know that I had three children. Two of them went to public school. Just had some bad experiences there. And so when my son was in the fifth grade, someone mentioned, we went to a PTA meeting. And half of the parents that were there, just the parents themselves, looked a little bit, maybe something like we wouldn't, they just looked a little different. And we were like, this doesn't seem to work for us anymore. Maybe we'll just keep our son home. So someone told us about a charter school. Well, it's a charter school. So we went and looked. And our school, it wasn't very appealing. The people were very, very nice there. And they said, we don't have sports. You'll have to be, the mother and father will have to be involved. You'll have to sign a little contract with us. And we're really into academics. If you're not into that, maybe this isn't for you. We're like, oh, man, this is just what we wanted. Went in there. Everything worked really, really nice for us. That in what we experienced, no bullying, let's just say that, from anybody, whether you were fat or skinny or gay or whatever, nothing. All they wanted to do was teach the children. They it's about academics. How about a baseball team? Just academics. They sent my son, they helped him. He went to UNT. Everything worked out fine. My daughter, I'm not going to mention the school, so nobody will say, you shouldn't mention the school, went to a public school here in San Antonio, Northwest area, and was, before we knew it, a little girl, 13, 14, 15, hanging around with gang members, selling drugs. Went straight to the principal, hey, my daughter's in trouble. And the man basically told me, everybody there, my kids don't come to the school, Mr. Cobble. I wouldn't send my kids. So that's all I wanted to say.
All right, Mauro, so that's an interesting story. We've got a contrast between public and traditional public schools and a charter school. So when Mauro was telling the story and he said, this is a school, do you think we heard kind of like the self-selection process of what they were going for. They said, this is the kind of process we're going to have. So Sharon Nichols, can you kind of talk about, what you heard?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of anecdotes where you're going to find stories of people having good and bad experiences at public schools and at charter schools. With respect to the comparison, though, public schools are being put under conditions that are increasingly stressful, where they're by law, they have to accept all students. Their resources are being stripped. And so it's leading to a situation that's challenging the educators, the very well-intentioned educators that work there, to deal with the multitude of situations one must deal with when you're trying to educate quite a diverse pool of students from socioeconomic backgrounds, racial backgrounds, and so forth. And then on top of it, we have a system where students have to pass tests. The academic stressors are heightened. And again, and resources are stripped. So not to excuse a context that might not be keeping students as safe as they should, but I think as a policy mechanism, when you can create charter schools that are smaller, can be more selective, it is quote-unquote easier to control for some of these more negative situations because you are freed up from all the other regulations and situations that are piled onto the public school. So that kind of comparison naturally is going to come through. It's a problem, though, because we're taking the monies away from the public schools. We're making it harder to do the jobs in the public schools. And so we need to do a better job at really equalizing the playing field in terms of what we're offering in the public versus the charter schools. And that's just not happening. Charter schools are, you know, again, they're freed up from some of those tighter restrictions and regulations and allowed to be more selective. So again, it makes sense that that kind of situation happens.
Right. So let me bring in Joshua Child real quick. He's the Assistant Professor of Education Policy and Planning in the Department of Educational Administration at UT Austin. So when we heard that story from Mauro, and he's talking about the self-selection process, he went to the PTA meeting. He didn't like what he saw. He was motivated to try to go do something more for his child, went to a charter school. They said, we don't do sports. We have academics. Your kid, you're going to have to get involved. Your wife's going to have to get involved. And your kid had better meet these standards. So another kid may not, you know, want to do all of that. But you're automatically getting the cream of the crop, highly motivated, resourced children with a support system that want to do well. So, yeah, that charter school is going to do better, right, Joshua?
Well, I think also, too, you're also getting parents who have the information and who are getting information and know where to go and how to go, and maybe not at the start knowing how to navigate the system in terms of understanding the traditional versus charter school landscape. But with the caller said there, he received some information about charters, and not all parents and families know even what options they have or the choices that they may have, or even if there is a choice, or the fact that there might be other schooling options in their own neighborhood. And so I think that's something also to take into consideration is, you know, having understanding that parents and families that have information about stuff are able to go and navigate the system and learn how to do that in much better ways than parents and families that are not. And I think the other point, too, to recognize is that, you know, again, and it's kind of tapping into what Sharon just said, which is that, you know, you have these antidotes where people have different opinions and experiences. But again, I think underlying in that was the fact that, you know, this parent got some information, received the information, and was able to use that information to help benefit, you know, his family and his children. And I think that also is telling for public schools and thinking about the ways in which their messages and what they're doing in their own schools and that not
right, but,
all
but
of their
charter schools are, you know, they advertise on TV. I see billboards.
Exactly.
They're doing all they can to get their message out. It's interesting to see that they have the funding to do that. Let me check in with Camille Phillips, our TPR education reporter. And so if there was a charter schools, how big are they in say like Bexar County? If it was a school district, how big of a school district would it be?
Well, I first wanted to say something about briefly about how under state law, Texas charter schools are required to take all students, but they can do some limitations such as geography. They are also not required to provide transportation, which can create a limitation if parents don't have resources to provide transportation. So there are definitely ways to limit who your pool of kids are, but at the basic level, they're supposed to accept all kids.
Sure, but what they were doing is they were messaging verbally, this is what
right.
we are, and it's helping people get to the right, pick the right school.
Right.
is a way to
there's
also...
Yes.
So, but, okay, go on.
Well, what I was going to say was that in San Antonio, there are about 32,000 students in charter schools. That's about 7% of the overall enrollment in the San Antonio metro area. So if you're ranking that as a single school district, it'd be the fourth largest district in San Antonio. So they're definitely a group of, you got to watch.
Okay, so the fourth largest, it would be the fourth largest school district in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. So Ingrid Cotton, do you think that, you know, if it was the fourth largest school district in San Antonio, that it should, charter schools should be getting more resources?
Charter schools try to make the most of what they get. I think that there are opportunities in the future for, I think the way it was meant to be was that there would be more cooperation between the traditional public schools and the charter schools, and that, for example, if there are buildings in the traditional public schools that are not being used because maybe students have moved out to the suburbs, then maybe those buildings could be shared with a new charter school. It hasn't really worked out that way because there's been a more adversarial relationship between the traditional public schools and the charter schools. But I'm hopeful that in the future there will be more cooperation, and that what I encourage my readers as public school parents, whether they're traditional public school parents or industry charter school parents or in open enrollment public charter school parents, that they should all message their legislators and tell that education is a priority and that public school funding is important. And we should grow the pie, not fight between traditional public schools and charter schools about who gets what share.
Let me go to take a caller, Alisa. Alisa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
So I work at a charter school, and I have been able to see kind of both sides. So we definitely try to market things to parents that's new and exciting, such as a dual language program. But in the end, I feel like our students are falling behind. You know, teaching them a different language. And then come testing time, they're required to test in English, and they're just falling behind.
Okay. And Alisa, thank you for that. So let me get a reaction here from Sharon Nichols, from that teacher. She's a teacher at a charter school. Feels like her students are falling behind.
Yeah, I guess without more information, it's hard for me to comment, except the fact that standardized testing is... And the use of the standardized tests in Texas and throughout the country, particularly for students for whom English is a second language, is highly problematic because we're putting these benchmark achievement expectations without providing the adequate steps to help students ensure they'll be successful. Students, especially ELL students, you know, come to school with a variety, with a range of proficiencies in their ability to master English and their understanding of the language, and yet we expect them to pass these tests in a monolithic way, at a monolithic level, and it poses challenges for students in charter schools. It poses challenges for students in public schools. That's certainly across the board situation, and. In a charter school, depending on the language education system, that could be supportive or it could be a hindrance to teachers' abilities to do what they need to do to keep support students.
Here's an email from Shelley. Public education is a common good, not a commodity. Parents are obviously very important stakeholders. They are not the only stakeholders, though. The choice narrative turns public education into a commodity and makes parents the only stakeholders. Public schools belong to the public and to the community. More about the charter schools when we come back. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this quick break.
In a time of seemingly increasing intolerance, one San Antonio teacher is using the lessons of the Holocaust to encourage empathy among her students.
They see these children of the Holocaust, these faces, and they're like, oh gosh, this one's so little, he's the same age as my baby brother.
Lisa Berry was recently honored for her efforts in spreading a message of tolerance to her fifth graders. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about charter schools. They are publicly funded but privately run. Charter schools have been operating in Texas for about 22 years. Some say there's been an overall positive bias as we talk about charter schools in the general public, certainly by our statewide politicians. And the criticism is that charter schools select the most capable and motivated students, a self-selection process, at the cost of siphoning off of the shrinking funding that's available for our traditional public schools that we have in Texas. But charter schools are here. They're growing. How do you find the right charter school for you? Because some of them are low performing. Some of them are kind of there's all sorts of issues sometimes with the people who run them. Every once in a while, you're going to find out about a charter school where there's some sort of a fraud or hanky-panky going on behind the scenes. So you're going to do your homework to make sure that you get the right charter school for you. Many of them are on the up and up and have good track records. Just going to find out that you make sure you get the right one. Got a question or comment? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Christy is on the line. Christy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I used to pay quite a bit of attention to the charter school movement in Texas, but what I've since been distracted by other things. I am curious, though. While we know that the majority of decrease in funding from the state has been the result of, you know, property appraisal creep and that nature, things of that nature, but is there any studies that have indicated a correlation between the absolute number of increase in charter schools and the decrease in funding for traditional public education schools or not?
So we're looking at the funding levels, if there's a correlation between that and Sharon, do you know? Sharon Nichols?
I don't know about absolute number of charter schools, but there was a study just released that looked at the Oakland area and another area, I think, in California that showed pretty substantively that there was millions being siphoned from public education districts as a result of the charter policies and enactment in that state. I don't have the details of the numbers, but yes, in general, yes, that charter schools and their proliferation, there is a connection to that and the decrease in the funding for public education. And I'd have to look up the exact reference for the one that just came out in California. Maybe
and,
Joshua knows.
Yeah, Joshua Childs?
Yeah, I'm on the same boat as Sharon with there being a yes on that.
Okay, all right, now the caller. This is Carla. And Carla, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Okay, Carla, go ahead.
So I just wanted to say that regarding charter schools, they are stripping money away from public schools, which are already struggling money-wise due to so many cuts. But the bottom line is every time someone sends their child to a charter school, it leaves our public schools even more underfunded. And kids with special needs or low test scores or parents that allow truancy or kids that are just plain too much trouble, these kids suffer, and that's the bottom line. I understand everyone cares about their kid, but that doesn't mean the community kids shouldn't be taken into consideration.
All right. So let me go to thank you for that call, Carla. Let me go to Inga Cotton, and she runs the blog San Antonio Charter Moms. And do you want to respond to that?
Yeah. I think the caller is absolutely right that as a community, we need to be really concerned about the neediest students and make sure that special education students are getting taken care of, the English language learners get taken care of, the students who don't have transportation, they need a better solution. But I can speak as a parent of a special needs child who's at a charter school. He's really a handful. And like, I thank his teachers profusely every time I see them because they're very dedicated and they've worked very hard to include him in the classroom as much as possible. So I think it varies across schools how much of a commitment there is to special education students. In my particular situation, the neighborhood public school that my son would have gone to, they're probably having to give more money back in recapture than they would have otherwise. But you know, it's kind of that money kind of follows my son.
That's the Robin
to his
Hood
school.
Situation.
Right, right, exactly. So in the long run, that school, they might have to hire fewer teachers or not expand their building as much. Although I think right now they just demolished the fine arts building at the campus down the street. So I think it's important to trust parents to know their children. Not every parent is going to put as much time and energy into it as I do. There need to be more tools out there to help parents. And then even the schools that are struggling the most need to be brought up to a higher level so that even the parents who don't put in the time to do the research, that their children are still guaranteed a good quality education.
So Camille Phillips, Texas Public Radio education reporter, you've been covering the enrollment issues, the contractions that we're seeing at SAISD and other local school districts. Do we know for a fact that those shrinking enrollments are due to, and it's interesting, this is happening while San Antonio is in a population boom, but are these areas, this contraction due specifically to the growth of charter schools?
Districts will largely say that. There's numbers to back that up partially. I'm still crunching the numbers. It's kind of complicated. But I will say that there are also some, you know, outlying districts that are still growing, like Northside ISD, Burney ISD. So it's somewhat a population shift and a geographical limitation. So Northeast ISD has no more room to grow. South San ISD, you know, has their footprint that's not going to expand. But yes, their enrollment is dropping
and they're laying off teachers.
Increasing. Yes.
And we've heard from the school administrators, it's because of charter schools.
Right. Yes. And that's, you know, because funding follows the kid, and there are charter school advocates will say, well, funding should follow the kid, but then there are people that are critics that will say, well, you've got to remember the other kids, you know, you've got to think about the good overall. And that's a little oversimplification because there's a lot of nuance in there.
And Inga, I hear you're saying something like, well, we need to be adding more money to education funding so that we're not fighting over dollars. I mean, is that your point of view?
Yeah, I think that it troubles me to see conflict between traditional public schools and charter schools because they are all trying, when I visit schools, when I talk to teachers, when I talk to leaders, they're all trying to do what's best for the kids, except for the few that are corrupt. But for example, like school board members who have to resign because they're taking bribes, or charter schools who close because their cafeterias have food poisoning. Yes, there are bad things that happen out there, but most of the people I encounter, they're trying to do what's best for the students.
Right. There's good and bad actors everywhere you look. And so, Sharon, did you want to add to this? It's like you did.
Yeah, I just think this whole charter movement over the last few decades, we have to remember, it started as an idea from Al Shanker, if I have this right, who argued that we should have a way for public schools to innovate, because public schools are mired in a lot of regulations because we're dealing with a lot of kids and a lot of issues, and those regulations largely are important and we need them. So why not allow schools to innovate, but yet bring that innovation back to the public schools? And unfortunately, that idea got usurped by neoliberal corporate ideologues who have now couched it as choice and have created this situation where now we are putting parents in this situation because of how things are funded, because of how charters are set up. Now we do have this situation where it's couched as choice, and for some it is. It depends on how much you know. It depends on what's available in your area. Rural areas do not have choice. And yet those public schools suffer from some of the same factors that we're talking about. And so I think we just as a larger issue, everyone remember that this notion of choice is being used to create a system where people are making lots of money. Lots of money is getting funneled into it. I mean, these big corporate entities that are starting up schools all over the country and are making lots of money off of it. It's a philosophical problem, I think, that we're supportive of here. We all want schools to do well. We all want all of our students to be given the best opportunities that are possible. And I just hope we can find a way through this so that students who are in our public schools can also receive the best of the best.
Okay, let me take another caller. This is Kim. And Kim, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for taking my call. As a soon-to-be parent of a kindergartner, I totally agree with the desire for a better way or any way to navigate the offerings at charter schools as well as public schools, because so many do have school choice, and I don't know if even the best educated parents know what school offers what. And I ideally, that'd be something that's state mandated, that the state would help fund. So with the new accountability system, I don't think that's necessarily it, or I know that's not it, but I guess it's a baby step. So will charter schools also be operating under that same reporting and accountability system?
Okay. So Joshua Childs, can you talk about the accountability that charter schools have? I know that if they fail for 3 years straight, they're shut down, right?
Yeah, for the most part, that is what is to believe, that, you know, failing for 3 years in a row, that they are supposed to be shut down or, you know, taken back over, or a new charter management organization come in and run the school. That always isn't necessarily the case. And so you do have charters in the state that have not showed results, that are still operating, maybe just had a leadership change or positional change or two, and they're still operating and still producing the same type of results. And so I think we need to think about, and I think when the new accountability system rolls out, I believe the school year after next, thinking about ways in which we kind of tighten regulations, tighten accountability measures around charter schools. So it doesn't feel like the wild, wild west out there, that we are holding charter schools to the same type of accountability standards as traditional public schools.
Okay. All right. And Camille?
I think the caller was asking whether or not charter schools will also get the letter grades. And the answer to that is yes, they will. But the district, the way they operate as districts, is a little complicated, because there can be campuses on different cities. And so the district rankings, you may need to look at the campus level rather than the district rankings.
Okay. And so, and that information is made available by the schools?
This TEA will publish them for the first time this fall, but the campus level won't be official until the following school year.
Okay, but that information is available, and you can track that down online. But that's easy for people who can navigate online. We're going to keep talking about charter schools. Got questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980. If you want to answer your questions, this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In the summertime, you're looking at the next school year, and you're thinking maybe a charter school might be a good fit for my child. Got a question about how that would work. Got some questions. Here's a place to ask them. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Got a panel of experts for you, including Inga Cotton. She runs a blog called San Antonio Charter Moms. What's the kind of typical question that someone would ask about, you know, hey, should I go to a charter school?
Right. So often, I interact with a lot of people on social media, and they're hearing about charter schools for the first time, or they're new to San Antonio, or they're starting to think about pre-K 4 or kindergarten, and they're trying to figure out any advantages there might be to a charter school versus their neighborhood public school. And one of the first things I do is refer them to the school report cards, which is the current version, since TEA hasn't issued the letter grade reports yet, but they can look at what the stats are on their neighborhood school. And then they can also get school report cards for charter schools and see how are those students doing on standardized tests. And then they want to know about qualitative things, like do they have dual language there? What sports do they have there? What's the school culture like? And those kind of the questions that really matter to parents. And a lot of it's word of mouth, and a lot of it is using online tools, like Families Empowered has a good school search tool with a map. And there's more tools in the pipeline that I can't talk about yet, but so stay tuned.
All right. Let's go to another two. And Sharon?
Yeah, and I would just add to those good recommendations, questions about teachers' certification. What are the certification regulations for that school? How many teachers are certified? Are they certified in the subjects that they're actually teaching? Bilingual teachers, especially if that's an area of concern for you, make sure they're certified and trained in those areas would be one thing. I would also want to know something about the disciplinary policy, because we have some charters who are prepackaged sorts of entities that you can see around the nation, like KIPP or Democracy Prep or things like that. So I would want to know what is the disciplinary policies there, and if that's something that aligns with your beliefs and values and how that's going to be run.
So when you ask, when you try and decode that, does that mean if you get paddling, or are you talking about if a kid doesn't do their homework, they get thrown out of school? What do you mean?
Yeah, I think it's just understanding, yeah, what are the rules around academics and behavior, and how does that school handle it? I don't know what these entities do, or what they think, or what their philosophies are, but I think holding them accountable and asking them is important. You know, there's some that have really high across the nation student suspension rates. I don't know why. I don't know what's going on, but that's something to look into and to understand when you're thinking about taking your child to a school, is just understanding the philosophy of that school.
Okay, back to the phone lines. And Federico. Federico, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call. Earlier, a caller was talking about how charter schools have been used by neoliberals, conservatives to opt this word of choice. But charter schools, I feel like, have existed and been booming because they're filling a gap. They're filling a gap that public schools, traditional public schools, can't fill. And there's also a concern for the most needy students, you know, students in special education. A charter school definitely has more competition. You know, they make the public schools more competitive. Why can't this mechanism be used to fill in those gaps as well? Because, it, as we've been saying, it is an industry, it is a business, and naturally a business competition will go in and fill these gaps. So I feel like across both sides of the aisle, Republicans, Democrats, there are interests that can be met with charter schools on both sides.
All right, Federico, thank you for that call. Interesting points there. The thing about competition, the idea that charter schools create competition and they have forced public schools to innovate and respond to the needs of the schools. I think that was one of the points that he made. Let me go to Joshua Childs, Assistant Professor of Education Policy and Planning in the Department of Education Administration at UT Austin. I mean, we've certainly have seen public schools go through a revolution in the last 20 years across Texas. Is it a response to the competition and innovation that charter schools have brought to the area?
I mean, one could say yes, right? That charter schools have forced traditional public schools to innovate in ways. Earlier, we were talking about the kind of marketing and advertising, and you're seeing districts across the state actually go and use those same type of methods of advertising, marketing to get students back into the traditional public schools that they've been losing over the last couple of years. You also can, you know, the changes though to changing demographics in some of the largest urban areas in our state, right? And seeing more and more people, predominantly, you know, mostly white folk people, moving into cities but wanting to keep their children out of the traditional public schools due to, you know, different reasons. And so you're seeing, you know, you're seeing this kind of pushback in terms of what does it actually mean to send your child to be a student in the traditional public school. And so I think one of the things we have to keep in mind is, what does it mean for public schools in this new era where charter schools are not going away? And how do we kind of, you know, the caller who just called in just talked about that they're filling a gap. And part of the reason we have a gap is because, as Ms. Inga Cotton had said earlier, we have this issue of funding. We have a problem of funding where, you know, we're kind of forced into this dichotomy situation between charter schools or public schools, traditional versus non-traditional. And I think focusing on trying to improve the funding around traditional public schools and charter schools, maybe we create a less kind of competitive type of environment here in the state around education.
Okay. Let me go to another caller, and this is Steve. And Steve, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I have a friend that has sent his kids to charter school that is more in line with his religious beliefs. And he's outright said that the religious right uses charter school as a way to defund public schooling because they couldn't change the curriculum head on in a public school, so they have to choose a school that they can send their kid to that has a curriculum more in line with their faith. So I'd like to discuss that maybe a little bit.
Okay, Steve, thank you for that call. So we know that there are some religiously affiliated organizations that have become charter school operators. And Sharon Nichols, what does that look like?
Well, that enters into the issue of separation of church and state source of concerns, because now you're asking publicly funded entities to promote particular religious orientations or views. And I think that's highly problematic, and that we are seeing that kind of creep happening in that use of charter schools to promote certain religious views. I think that's hugely problematic. But also going back to the comments on competition, I just want to say that this framing of competition and using schools to compete so others get better is very problematic, because competition implies winners and losers. And I don't understand why we are looking at kids in schools as losing to somehow make some system better. Kids are not commodities. We're not trying to make, you know, widgets function better as widgets. We're trying to make human beings. And so I agree with Inga and what Joshua has said as well, is that this pitting of competition between schools has to somehow be addressed and allow everyone to win and succeed and be supported. We want everyone to win.
And Inga Cotton, can you talk about, have you seen religious organizations become charter school operators, and does that impact their curriculum?
I think it's important to be clear that, like, whereas other states like Florida have vouchers so that, like, private schools can accept public money to educate students, Texas does not have a system of vouchers. And so all of the open enrollment charter schools in Texas are nonprofits. As far as I know, they're all not religiously affiliated. There is some sorting and self-selection among parents depending on the school culture. And, like, there's just a certain vibe that some schools have, but they all have to follow the law as far as separation of church and state. It's a tricky area, and I think what I've observed is that, for the most part, schools are acting in good faith. Sometimes individual teachers will make mistakes.
I have seen, I don't know if it's happened here in San Antonio, but I have seen some, like, religious private schools convert to charter schools, and they separate themselves. They create a separate nonprofit, but sometimes they even have, like, religious after-school programming that's still connected to it. So there definitely is some of that, like, feed over that can bleed over is what the word I'm thinking of.
But you mentioned vouchers, and vouchers is always the next level that we're talking about, where charter school movement is going in Texas. Every legislative session, it pops up, and they want to see if Texas can become a voucher state. And as we're talking about limited shrinking funds for public schooling, this would do that even more. And so let me go over to Sharon Nichols at the Center for Research and Policy in Education. What's the concern about vouchers?
Well, vouchers is another way to, again, redirect funds away from the public education system, giving tax credits to families attending private schools. Largely. And what we've seen in other places, a lot of times the tax cut is marginal, so it's not really beneficial to folks for whom private education is already out of the realm of their financial capabilities. So it's really a boon to middle and upper class families, because it's whatever the amount is, they're already going to go to private schools. So again, it's a way to redirect funds away from public schools, and again, give benefits to upper middle class families, many of whom already are attending private schools, are already intended to go to private school settings. And so it's a huge problem.
And, well, if it becomes law, then it would become further dollars flowing away from traditional public schools, mm-hmm. and going towards other schools, private schools, charter schools, and that would be a great shakeup. 30 seconds, Inga, what's your reaction to that?
Vouchers, for the most part, voucher systems don't have accountability, and that concerns me, because if there's public money, there needs to be quality.
Okay, and we got to keep an eye on accountability, because that's actually what started this whole movement to begin with,
right.
And make sure that these children are being educated and that they can become contributing citizens in our society. I want to thank all of our guests. Sharon Nichols, she's a research associate at the Center for Research and Policy in Education, a professor of educational psychology at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Joshua Childs, he is at UT Austin. Inga Cotton, her blog is San Antonio Charter Moms. Camille Phillips is a TPR education reporter.